っていうんですね。
この親子が親
父。いえ。
だからさ、どんな国交上なプレッシャー。When you are late to judge the case, well, then we'll start. Parliament is a very kind body. Parliament is a very happy, happy, happy organization. Very gentle, very lazy. Parliament is a nice one. What you see on TV is not what happened in Parliament. Those are things that are happening outside Parliament, not in Parliament. Well, colleagues, we are going to start with our mission, or the presentation by Zia. We have some discussion. I know that many of us are sitting here, it's a little bit far to see the presentation. And we will try then to invite the leadership of Zia. To take us through on the presentation. Because we always want colleagues to introduce themselves when they appear before the committee. Maybe to close the door, it means there's a march outside. We will invite the leadership of the Israel and introduce your leadership, your president of the commission, and then you make presentation, whoever is making presentation on behalf of the commission. We are most welcome colleagues, and thank you for coming to Parliament and meet with us and prefer from the annual development plan and other challenges that we have identified. We will invite you then to take the stage and make a presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Maybe I should introduce myself and the delegation over to the committee. I'm Thomas Pallas, the head of the mission. So I run my commission. It's Professor Anton of my other letter, the deputy chairperson of the Southern Rights Commission. There's Mr. Abbasa on my left, the acting bureau of the commission. On my right is our chief financial officer, Mr. Zimmer. Across is Dr. Busse, our commissioner, and Professor Kuten, who is part of our extended family, who has been dealing with the the woman became invisible to the website. Professor Kuten is part of the council we're working with is working on what they the Religious Freedom and Rights Council has been doing and intends to do with us. And Commissioner Kuman is on the top left. Is also part of the committee. So that's our delegation for today. And I would like to thank the committee for giving us ample time. In the past, it's been given the first time to talk about what it is that we're doing. We'd like to thank you very much for affording us the time of our presence today. What we want to start with is to say we're almost a year old in this current committee. We're finishing our year, end of March. And we really want to take you through what we've been doing and then get into how we're moving forward. We have been asked today to present our annual performance plan. We should look at what we're going to do in the next year. And so you know that we've been dealing with issues of diminishing and diminished pace. When we came to you earlier on, when we started around May last year, we raised the issue of the low profile of the commission and the fact that most people didn't know what the committee was doing. We decided to start with the added method. What are the added methods on the table? The issue of Ulualugo first, as we started, was the issue of initiation school and the crisis that was facing initiation school. We did some research on it, As a result, there were, of course, as a citizen, of course, bringing up the country coffee at that point. But for the first time, the nation is saying this, that, and all this mutilation came up for one anymore. I'm sure it's still the plan that has come from government. But that's the agency of the initiation school, and the students would put that letter on the table at that point. And the nation did listen, and the nation did pay attention. And then along December, we learned there were reports on funds, which also fell on a very hot issue. That needed a direction from the Salon Health Commission. The debates are still raging on. And the same as the Salon Health Commission, we need to be part of that debate, but we need to lead in terms of what is the state, what you want, and how do you move forward. So that as part of promoting and protecting, we also say, we need to own what we own, and we own what we own. And I think we've been very loud on those issues, and I think we've given the nation the direction that the nation needed. We've also been dealing with the issue of religious rights and freedom, which we'll deal with later. We highlighted it to you, that we need to relook at the whole thing around how religious institutions are run, what's happening on the ground, how do you promote and protect, but also how do you deal with people's beliefs, things and how do you protect them. That's what we've been doing in the past year. We're currently finding like a law report on grace, which one to launch early in April. We feel the nation is directing on issues of grace, especially the issue of the use of grace, the issue of the recycling of grace, the issue of shortage of land, so we talk, the issue of how to affect people's belief systems, and the grace has been reused and recycled. The whole issue around the municipal cases and what is happening there. And the fact that we'll be dealing with it critically when we do our presentation as to what is happening around race and municipal cases. So we also give a whole range of issues in trying to finalize and solve complaints. We've received a vast number of complaints in the recent past, but also been looking at the previous complaints. Part of the complaints we're currently dealing with, which I'm sure you've picked up in a minute, is the issue of the troll, the vaccine testing issue. It's very hot currently in the media. We're working very closely with the teams and the people in terms of how we promote and protect this particular cultural practice, but also throw light on this issue to say what is it, how do we make it work, why is it so important for us to prevent as opposed to abolishing on this other issue. So it's kind of what we've been doing and it's kind of what we continue to do. Maybe before I do that, I'd like to raise the issue of funding up front and say we're very much disappointed that our funds were not there. What we thought they would be. There's a whole range of what to be done. I'm sure in this past year we've demonstrated that we need to hit the ground, we need to be with the people on the ground. And for us to do that, we need capacity to do that, we need to be in the provinces, we need to be in the region, we need to hit those villages, those townships, those urban areas, those suburbs, in order for us to find the views of people and make sure that the nation feels that we have. But while we can only do the national, it's very hard for us to find ourselves on the ground. It's very critical. Our budget for 2014-15 was 13.3 million. For 2015-16, it's now 35.8. We will be struggling with how we deal with issues of salary increment and the general increment and do the work that needs to be done. I'm sure the committee will agree with me that to hear our voices now, more than we've ever had the voices of the Salon Rights Commission before. We've been able to clarify the role of the Salon Rights Commission in terms of nation building, in terms of social cohesion, in terms of respecting cultural, religion and language, but also in terms of how we learn to live together as a nation and celebrate our differences and accept those differences and not be threatened by religious differences, cultural differences, language differences. But in order for us to do this, we can do it effectively. We need capacity. So we're saying again, please, with the committee, to really look at the issues and say, this commission has demonstrated already what this commission can do and what this commission needs to do. So we'd like to start with our to the different. Most of what we've been doing comes from what we call our national productive conference resolution. This is a system that is supposed to have our MPC when we start so that we can get the mandate from our committee council and then move on to looking at how we implement those. But what we've done, because of certain funding, we said we'll go with what we have. That those were the resolutions that were taken by our previous commission in 2013 and will implement those. But most of what we do comes from what is on the ground, what people are raising from the ground, and we're working from there. So while we look at what the resolutions say, we're also looking at what people on the ground are saying, what is the media saying, what is the temperature on the ground, where are the challenges, how we solve those challenges as they arise. This is our mission, to look at mutual respect around diverse cultural religious and linguistic communities. We want to foster rights of communities to spread, observe, and practice their cultural religion and language. And those know that say apartheid was just about the whole range of things. The most important thing was the issue of cultural religion and language, and how people religion, language, and culture was made to be not so important. So we need to rebuild those and find a way of how various religions come together and what we'll talk about the data later. But our aim is to say, if religions work together, the respect that will foster out of that working together will build the nation and will help us not to look at religious wars and all those things. Those people already accept one another and they feel they're working cooperatively together to build this nation. We are very much into social cohesion and nation building, and that's part of our principles going forward. We want to strengthen and empower communities. We've already started with what we are saying, which we'll be doing as we move forward. When we look at our MPC, which I'm sure you'll see, is to say how we capacitate communities themselves to begin to say, this is my right, and I have the right to this particular cultural practice, religious practice, and language across the board. The work we're currently doing now has already demonstrated that. The issue of Ukhlolo, for instance, the unity inspection, we have been talking to communities themselves to say, it's time to defend this cultural practice. They are in full control of themselves. We believe it's a very useful cultural practice. We believe we need to be promoting and protecting it. We also believe that communities themselves have the right to say, this is what we want to do, this is how we're going to do it. It's already regulated. And we're very strong saying, abolishing people's way of life is not the way the country ought to be going. It's not going to build this nation. It's not going to build social cohesion. It's going to make people not trust the system until they don't have a stake in it. The king, you see, has already been working with us on this. They are going to be dealing with the matter tomorrow. They've got a match. And we think it's part of people claiming who they are. And I think for the first time, the nation is saying it's enough around cultural practice. Because since we started, we've noticed that people are not being consulted on these issues. Decisions are being taken without the communities to trust them being part of the conversation. And we are currently capacitating them. We'll be training them as we move forward on conflict resolution. How do they resolve conflict when it arises? But we are also saying we'll be bringing them to the portfolio committee, especially those that are the coordinators of all these issues, to say let them come themselves and say what it is that they're doing. We're also talking to the maidens themselves. We've had several meetings with the maidens themselves who are being inspected for the community to say, are they cooperating because they want to part of this? Are they being forced to do this? Is someone putting them under pressure? And you see, they again, because they are powerful, they are, and they are proud of what they want to do. So it's part of what we're doing to strengthen and empower communities for them to start saying, this is who we are, this is what we do, this is within the Bill of Rights. We're not violating the Bill of Rights. And it's a right for us. It's not a privilege. Let's begin to talk the language of cultural religious and linguistic rights as opposed to privileges that can be given and taken away. Part of what we're doing is to organize and facilitate nations building dialogues. We seem to be having a lot of dialogues currently planning one on religion for next week, but as we start in the new year, we'll be unfolding a charter which we'll talk to later on religion, which we're finalizing. We've got a copy, we'll talk to it later. One on culture and one on language. So that people understand that these are rights-based issues as opposed to just things that are happening out there. And we'll be talking to the dialogues and we'll be looking at how we look at issues of diminishing heritage. Because most of us, of what we'll be dealing with, is people's heritage. When we look at the Khoisan experience, for instance, their heritage has been so diminished that their language is under threat, their culture is under threat, their original religion is under threat. So we say we want to work with those communities to see that their heritage is being diminished, and how to resuscitate them, so that they've got something to hold on to that they're proud of as they move forward. And we're also going to look at establishing provincial and national cultural, religious, and language advisory community councils. We feel it's very important that we become advised by experts in the field. How do you deal with the mindset of language in the country? The issue of language in schools, the issue of the medium of instruction in schools, the issue of how you build those languages that are left outside as far as the constitution is concerned, how do you rebuild them and how do you make them work? So we have having this advisory council which will be dealing with as we move into the new year. We want to be working on the factors that I said. We've already started work with council on the religious charter, because we felt that was very urgent and very important, but already work has started over a period of like 5-6 years or more, and we said this is an opportune moment for the nation to begin to debate this issue of religious freedoms and rights, and to say how we move forward on those things. But part of what we want to discuss is the issue of the charter. I hope that this included in your package, is the fact that the issue of the religious charter has been on the table, but we feel for the first time as a nation, we have a charter that says we are here to promote and protect all religions on an equal religion. No religion is less than any other religion. In an African religion, this charter has included people of many faiths. If you look at it, we've highlighted who has already signed the charter, and what we're saying is that we'll be taking the charter nationwide to communities, religious communities, rural communities. But what we want to use the charter for is a platform to say we acknowledge that people have religious rights. However, there are problems that we're faced with. If you look at what has been happening in terms of how our people are getting exploited on the ground, we do need to have regulations, which we did talk to you about earlier, that we need to regulate religious institutions. Right now, you just have to recognize yourself. I can come back to you the next meeting as Bishop Tom Kwanastan, because I've started my own church, and I'm now a bishop, and I'm running my own thing, and no one can tell me how to run it, and I do whatever I want to do. I can sell water and make profit, and just people not to take their medication and drink my water that I've prayed for. I can make them eat grass if I want them to, and tell them they'll be healed, and to ask them to watch it done with petrol. It's a nice idea, and people believe. People's belief systems will feel like being exploited, because belief is like that. It is to say, sorry, but what we're saying is that our rights policy, because mandated to promote and protect, part of promoting and protecting means regulating.
They've been meeting with the religious sector next week. The meetings have already started, but we're rolling that out to the new financial year to say it cannot be business as usual. What we face with now, which was not faced with 20, 30 years ago, most of the churches belonged to structures. What we have now is independent churches. They are started by individuals who own them, who do whatever they like. We are saying the foundation is that you have the right to include the country, so that the rights to religion and belief are protected. However, the other issue of how you behave within that, we are saying that you have a self-regulating system, that a religious sect itself ought to regulate itself. You need some council of elders, whatever we end up with, that will say your behavior is inappropriate for a pastor. Your behavior is appropriate. We have sanctioned religious leaders. Lawyers are sanctioned, doctors are sanctioned, teachers are sanctioned, social workers are sanctioned. Every profession you answer to someone. Of course, people don't say they answer to God. Everyone answers to God, but while we are here, you need to answer to somebody else. So we'll be coming back to the community very soon, hopefully, give us time to tell you more about the charter so that people know we're not saying we're fighting the belief system. The council has been running for a while, we are members of the council, but we're saying we feel the charter is of such great importance that it needs to be taken to the country as a whole, and we feel the Civil Rights Commission is best place to do it, and we feel we need to begin to talk about regulation. We need to start a difficult conversation. We know it's going to be a difficult conversation, but we want to see across the board, whether you are African religion, whether you are Muslim, Jewish, Christian, or whatever, there needs to be a system that says, this is acceptable, that's not acceptable. This is doable, that's not doable. So we're hoping very soon we'll come back to you with some proposals. And we're hoping you'll get a chance to look at the charter so that when you come back, you can make comments and ask questions as to what are the things you feel you're uncomfortable about. This has been a very long issue process in terms of developing the charter. And we think it has been very inclusive. For the first time, we see people of African religion buying into the charter, saying they feel that it's going to protect and promote their rights as well. We know what has been happening on issues of faith. African religion and the marginalization of African religion, and people in the African religion sector feel they're part of it, the Rastafari, all religions feel they're part of it, and we're very much in support of a process that includes everyone in the country. That's going to say, as a broad religious community, these are the things we want to do, and these are our belief systems, and this is how we feel our religion can promote it and protect it. So we're hoping to come back to you and have time to sit down with you and talk to this. We've been working very closely with Prof. Fitzek from Stellenbosch. We've worked very closely with people across the board. We feel they can help guide us as the Civil Rights Commission in terms of how we draw their expertise, legal expertise. Actually, you know, we tend to go back for skills somewhere else now and then to our budget to constraint. And we're then drawing on the talent force and drawing on other investors, free states, other investors. We've been talking to people in various institutions. We're going to go around all the investors to ask them to partner with us on this one and to look at how the nation with both this chapter and also say how do we deal with issues of regulation. At the age of commercialization of traditional and religious practices, we found that a very important thing because when we look at most of the cultural practices that are going wrong, it's the ethnic and religious practices. It's their commercialization that has gone wrong. So what we want to do is to look at how the proposed legislation that will stop the commercialization, because it interests them much. It's how they've been commercialized that has created the crisis. when pastors become millionaires and are running non-profit organizations, then we must know that something that's not working properly somewhere. When you sell poor people and you become a millionaire and you're a pastor of poor people, something somewhere has gone wrong. When, because it means you commercialize the thing, somehow you'll be able to make it, make money for you. And we need to be not afraid to say these things, that these things are being commercialized, and these things are being commercialized. But look at the initiation school issue. Initiation schools are a business. People make money out of that. Hence the debts are so high. Hence the mutilations are so high. We are saying we need to start talking about the things as to how commercialization of the cultural and religious practices have created a crisis for everyone. Look at Ukutwala and Ilobola, for instance. You can't say you're paying Ilobola for a 14-year-old. You're just trafficking that child. And we need to begin to have the language to explain what is happening out there. When you sanitize, you can't say someone is paying Ilobola. They're all stories about Ilobola that you decide to skip and just grab the money and run. All that you've done is that you sold your daughter to the highest bidder. And you can't sign and bring in empty contingent by saying someone is paying in the world. And all those things that need to have a conversation with the nation about. That when people are paying in the world for 40 years old, then there's a commercial transaction there. And we need to regulate those things somehow. Find conversation with those focus groups. Debate and discuss those issues. But find a mechanism. They're going to put the things into a proper perspective and deal with them in this way. So that's part of what we'll be doing moving forward. We'll also be doing respect, as I said, on the question. People will be looking at their issues of indigenous games, for instance, because we feel that with children. How do we bring their children back to the main fold to say they used to have their own indigenous games, for instance? So the Pakistan children start being proud of who they are and where they come from. Part of the conversation we want to be having with the nation this year, which will look at issues of games and those kinds of issues, is the issue of animation. We are talking about what are our children watching. How does it build the nation? Does it build the nation to watch Tom and Jerry the whole afternoon and the cats being skinned alive and all sorts of other violent things happening to the poor kids? What are we saying to our children when we are 14-year-old, when we are a 4-year-old, and we can laugh and violence and they make fun? I always say parents look at cartoons and they never watch what their children are watching. They think it's a cartoon, so it must stay. And they let their kids watch. You just have to watch 10 minutes of Tom and Jerry, then you know this is pure violence. Those of us who have worked with children before, you know, we teach children to tolerate violence. The very clear concept of anything you think your child doesn't find, and all they're watching is someone being in the life and they bend their cane and suddenly it grows again and they, you know, the filters are cotton, they go and everyone is laughing and it's a joke. So we want to say, we want to know what the children are watching. How do we tell our own story as a nation? How do we tell the story of Nelson Mandela to children in a happy way? Tell friendly way, tell relevant way, and how do we begin what begins the conversation with the public or pastor to say, let's not waste the space, let's create our own stories, let's tell our own stories of who we are, where we come from. It's a great fact, story has never been told to many children in this country. How do you tell those stories in a child friendly way? How do you tell the story of Ushaga, for instance, in a child friendly way? Who was he? What was he trying to do? What did he stand for? And if all those things that we're saying, we need to start animating our own stories. That will build our nation as opposed to just importing stuff. So we're in conversation with the public broadcaster, we're talking to people in animation. We see what other cultures are doing. We're talking to the Chinese, for instance, we say between this hour and that hour in the afternoon, they're only playing Chinese-made animation. That teaches their children of who they are, where they come from, what happened in their past. They grew their culture there, they grew they are passed there and they bring it alive for children so that as they grow up, they understand who they are. They value who they are. And they tell their own stories in their own way. So we say part of this game and all these other things, one target children so that in 20 years time, we find a different type of child who appreciate freedom better. Because I think when we insulate our children and they don't understand where we come from, they will not appreciate the struggles that God has here, the sacrifices that God has here. So we need to start telling that story to our children in a child-friendly way, in a way that's not going to scare them, but in a way that will make them grow up appreciating what they have right now, as opposed to what we had in the past. So part of that conversation of games and storytelling and issues of animation that we're saying, let's tell those stories differently. And part of our strategic objective is to establish and run effective communication and marketing function. We have looked at the Civil Rights Commission in the past and we said maybe where we're not stuck was in how we're communicating our issues. Although there was work happening, but it wasn't being communicated effectively. So what we want to do now is the whole issue of engaging communities more, engaging the media more, occupying that media space, making sure that where it counts the most, making sure that the voices of the Civil Rights Commission are heard and heard very loudly, and making sure that people across the country feel they have the rights, and they need to protect those rights. Once we establish and want to mainstream cultural, religious, and language rights into the lawmaking process. Hence, we've been in Parliament more often than not, across the cultural committees, where we'll be making our input on issues of whether legislation being passed has mainstreamed cultural, religious, and linguistic rights of communities. We've seen legislation that has been passed, even totally before. Most of it wasn't talking to the real issues of the story. When we look at the Children's Act, it's quite shocking. It's like a European document. It could be a law passed in London. When it comes to if you want to be a legal guardian of a child, you have to go to the High Court. If I'm unquoting Kumu and my son and daughter have passed away, and I'm taking those children, I'm an illegal person. As far as the Children's Act is concerned, I need to go to the High Court and get my story straight there. I don't have money for a lawyer, I don't have access to a social worker, I'm just the first inherited, those children have nothing. They are living on my pension. And now, this law says, you want to be a legal guardian, well, go to court. We all know how Africans, for instance, become legal guardians. The funeral report, Saturday, Sunday, you told them, my partner, you'll take these kids with you now, they are your children. No social workers, no lawyers, no deal. The elders determine. And then by the time I dress back, I've got two kids in the back and they're mine for all intents and purposes. But the act we pass do not deal with our reality. We all know those realities. We experience those realities. But when we're in Parliament, those realities don't appear in the legislation. The realities that are there are much more Western. But I can't then say to the child of my family, no, I need to go to court for this kid. They ask me, what is this court thing now? What has court got to do with you? Because we told you, you must look after the kid. What is this court thing? So it will be confusing our communities once we start implementing this act. So what happens is that our people break the law all the time. We force them to break the law. And then when they try to register those children in their medical aids, in their pensions, that no, this child is not yours, there's no interest in this child. You might have an interest in this child, implement this act. This was passed in 2005. So we are saying we'll be much more firm in mainstreaming cultural, religious, and linguistic rights of communities into the legislation that is being passed. We'll be monitoring very closely what is happening in Parliament. We'll be objecting to certain things that we feel will alienate people more, and that will make people do the illegal thing when they can do the legal thing. So that the laws that pass talk to people's realities on the ground as opposed to what just might happen for 1% or 2% who inherit money. Although we appreciate that children who inherit money means to be protected. But how many of the millions who are offending the tenth inherit anything? All that inherit is responsibility. They don't have any money, children normally, if you get a suitcase or clothes, they're lucky. You get a flat suitcase with 3 cents, and that is your inheritance, and you have to hold up it. So protect the 2% because the 98%, that's because the 2% might inherit, and the sacrifice the 98%. It's just one example of what is going on. I could give you a whole list of things. So we look at the whole list of what works and what doesn't work. So we'll be here more often than not, funds a committee. We're going to be recommending NetLife policy propositions and several things. The first one is the religious freedom and rights, which we hope the portfolio committee will give us strength to come in and expand on it and give a proper presentation on it and to say what are we saying about what is happening in the religious sector. But we're saying the charter will form the foundation of everything that we're proposing so that people know that their rights have been protected. The issue of animal slaughtering, the issue of African religion, issues of tradition, issues of custom, are very much linked to animal slaughtering. You want to slaughter an animal, right now what exists is that you are at the mercy of the FDA. If you don't slaughter according to the rules, you will be arrested. Irrespective of what your traditional custom say, you must slaughter. And you have to sit to the rules. And if the bull bellows, then you make it bellow, and you see guys really come up and think it's going well. FCA has a view on that, that we are using that particular animal. How do we in Africa, when our African religion, custom, and everything say, the bull has to bellow, but the laws in the country say the bull should be straight. And this again, you know, the sign should be straight in the forehead, and then it bends to kill. And for the majority of people in this country, that is a religious experience. It's a spiritual experience. You're giving this to your ancestors because of whatever reason. And those are millions of people. Every weekend, basically, several weekends. But it's not totally regulated. There isn't legislation that talks to the customary and African religious issues on animal slaughter. So we'll be coming back in this coming year to look at this thing. The issue of Ukhlolo, we're currently busy with it. They are going to be promoting and protecting tomorrow. I think there's a march somewhere in KZN organized by the king and these people. To say people are going to demand their rights, the kickoff of a whole range of things they want to do to promote and protect. We'll also be looking at intense research on Ukhlolo to say, with legislation in place, why is it not being enforced? Because what we wonder about, even with the issue of Ukhlolo, why is the Sexual Offences Act not being enforced? Why is the Children's Act not being enforced? Why would we want to abolish things that were already regulated? Instead of doing the easy thing of saying if you break the law, you will be arrested. And that should be the normal thing. We should be giving excuses to people who are breaking the law and saying maybe to a cancer, you know. Yeah, you know. Cancer was never busy. Our second point is that cancer is not a busy. We don't buy into harmful cultural practices. Our belief as the star of my commission is that these cultural practices are being abused by people who are rapists and whatever else, who want to hide behind culture and take that. But what we're saying is that there's legislation that needs enforcement. And that's where you start. You enforce what exists. And then you deal with the culture. So we are saying, we'll be giving direction on this issue. The issue of grace, for instance. We're currently finalizing our report on grace, which we'll share with the committee very soon, hopefully next month. If we have a month to print, still looking for funds to print the report. But our report is looking at the whole issue of release of grace, which we feel Etobicoke Municipality is championing because of their legislation. provincial legislation allows people to rest for 10 years, and if you have not to come for 2 months, you will be removed, your vote will be removed, and another one will be put in there. Currently being implemented. It's talking about the time that, I mean, if I get there, because I didn't have money for a tombstone, and I get there and I find my father has been removed, it's totally unconditional. Because you're targeting poor people. You say to the poor, if you don't have money for a tombstone, well, you put your father in a plastic bag. You put your mother in a plastic bag because you don't have the money. And you put another one, this money is going to put out a tombstone in a good time. And it's unsustainable. I mean, why in a time of freedom, we're in a time when these rights are guaranteed by the Constitution. So what we're saying is that we need to start looking at how the rights of the dead are being protected and promoted, but also the rights of people to their culture and to their religion. Because those are things, you know, Africans access our ancestors to grace. If you get rid of my ancestors' grave, then I've got nothing. So because I didn't have money to put up a tombstone, you're going to take away that right. And the saying is, the nation, let's talk about this thing. What does it mean when we say this thing? It's because there's a gap in non-national legislation that deals with the issue comprehensively, how we deal with grave. Because grave, for some people, are a place of worship. This is like you bombing a mosque. You will do that. It's like you breaking down a church. But this grave for this particular person is where they go to talk to their ancestors, who then talk to God as intermediary. So you destroy every belief system this person has, which is why we're looking to the religious rights and freedom, and since the Charter covers these things, and whatever you believe in needs to be promoted and protected. And because the grace are an important thing. When we started the issue of the Medjugorje Coalition the other day, we discovered that in Medjugorje, for instance, the grace underneath the coalition. So we're meeting with the traditional here who were saying, no wonder this Medjugorje Coalition doesn't come right. It's based on people's grace. We have been talking to Eskom to discover that grace thing, that grace under the actual building, that is around the building. So it's built on people's grace and the communities have access because it's now a safe area and it's built up and when you want to go talk to your ancestors there, the issue of access to those graves is another problem. So we could be sitting here thinking maybe Eskom is not safe. And stuff as they are, but maybe they're dealing with other forces we don't know and we don't understand. So this might be the stuff for any provider. So what we're saying is that we need to find a mechanism, have what an agent traditionally has, of how reparations can be done, and how they can find culturally an African religion acceptable way of how they deal with this. The situation there. Because people now are left stranded, they have no access. So the issue of access to grace is very important. The issue of recycling of grace. So we're hoping the committee will help. And we're talking to Copter, we're talking to traditional leaders, we're talking to traditional healers. We're also going to be engaging the farmers' unions in terms of access to grace on farms. How is that possible? Because when you move from a farm, but the grace are left behind. Is the issue of security, the issue of how you then come. Sometimes the traditional healer would say you must be there at 12 o'clock at night to talk to ancestors about your problems, and how do you do it? What is possible, what is not possible? How do you find the middle road? Because most of what we deal with is mediation type thing. How do you access without compromising the security of the people who live on that farm? But how do you also have access to understand what is the middle road you find there? What are the possibilities of doing that? So around the issue of grace, there's a whole range of stories that need to be told. The graves that have been totally demolished because the municipality is building something there, the township or whatever. In the Eastern Cape, we've seen a lot of graves being demolished. and people pray that it's been run to the ground. But it's because they're not education, that's a specific kind of education. Because these are not just grades. These are belief systems. And what we're saying is that we need to start saying to communities, know your rights. When you see that there's something happening there, react and react fast. So that at least you can stop that demolition. Because, you know, a grave, I only say once you remove it, my father's bones there, you throw them away or whatever you do with them in that black box, in that black plastic thing, you can't bring them back. You know, it's not like a black one. I've lost out on that one. My belief system has crashed, that's not going to rise again. And we might sit here and think it's not that important, but for people with problems who are being told that what you need to do is to do 1, 2, 3, it's the answer to their life. And without that grave, when they get there and they find another tombstone with another name, it's the end of the road for them, etc. And to allow this thing to continue, and this week has been very exciting. So at the Charter Rights Commission, we'll be meeting with them again today. If you don't stop, we'll have to make you stop legally. Because it's an excellent thing. You recycle my father this weekend and throw away his bones. His body is dead and gone. I spent my last money buying the coffin. And the coffin is in a black plastic bag. What does that mean in country? 21 years into democracy that my father ends up in a plastic bag because I'm too poor to put up a tombstone. I'm not saying we can't allow this thing to go on anymore. We need to fight for the rights. We need to defend our community. We need to say it cannot happen now. It's not justifiable. You can't say there's no end, so your father will be in a plastic bag. You get 10 years of rest. You know, in every religion, you are guaranteed that you rest forever when you're dead. There's no timeline. Every religion in the world tells you that. But not in this country. 10 years is enough. During Freedom Day, 10 years is all you're going to get from us. It's either you pay more rent, they will rent the grave to you for 10 years. Come back and pay after 10 years. I'm already dead, so how am I supposed to go there as a ghost and pay you the 750 rents you want from me? Who's dead now? So we need to begin to say, and I'm not breaking any laws. You see, that's the beauty of the whole thing. The law allows them to do that. And has to be saying, how do we mainstream those cultural and religious rights into the legislation we pass? It's not an old legislation, but passed COVID-19. So it's not like we inherited it, so we live in with it. No, it's a new. No. But allow them to make you rise again after 10 years. And all they have to do is put a small classified ad in the newspaper that says grave number G417 Bridges. I don't know how many people read those classified ads, and I don't even know whether it can put up a tool so you can afford to buy the newspaper every day and go check whether grave number G761. No names are cast. It's going to be recycled. If you can't afford a tool so, you won't buy any newspaper, we all know that. Let alone just classify them. But the law says, so long as you advertise in the classified air and no one comes forward to object, you can recycle, reuse every dog of old bones, they're rested enough. But those are the examples we're giving you, let's say. We need to come back to the accent, because this is an accent issue. The more we allow this thing to happen, the worse that becomes. And besides, those are the things we've been doing for the year. We've tried to create efficiency in the system. We've discussed with the committee last time to say we'll have to look at how we save the little bit of money that we have and how we make the system work better. There's a report done by Paris through National Treasury that gave us a few pointers as to where the changes ought to be. We've made those few changes, and what we've done is to say whoever resigns will be replaced, so that we save funds. We're running a skeleton staff. It means whoever is there is being have been, so to speak, but as to what unbelievable hours. We brought in commissioners which came from better reports from National General that we should use commissioners more. So we engage in commissioners more in the work so that they use the political direction the work needs. And due to resignations, we've been able to find about 4.2 million rand, which we're now channeling into programs to work with people on the ground. But that's a real challenge, because then you don't have the legs to run, and the legs you have to run double the speed. But that's how we've been able to find the money to do the work that we've been doing. Otherwise, we would have been sitting in Joburg not doing much. So we're trying to rob people to take on at the base, and we're hoping our financial situation will improve soon due to the work that we're doing, and I'm sure the commission will agree with that, that the work the Sarah Rice Commission is doing cannot wait anymore. That the legislative review process needs to be monitored so that we can advise across the board in terms of other portfolio committees that are passing legislation, that we concentrate them about the rights of communities so that the legislation being passed is much more relevant and shows our where we are located in Africa, who we are and what we believe in. It talks to all those issues. So we will be doing a lot of work here, we'll be doing a lot of work in communities on the ground, we'll be doing a lot of work with religious leaders, we'll be doing a lot of work with cultural organizations, and we have signed a memorandum of understanding with a few organizations which we discussed with yourself earlier on in terms of partnership when we met with the committee. Earlier on we've already signed with the National House of Traditional Leaders because we feel most of the work we're doing is the work they're also supposed to be doing. So we're working very closely with the National House. While working very closely with the Consulenza in terms of the work that we're doing. The issue of the military ombudsman, people always find the time that we're interested in the military. We received a few complaints around the, what do they call it, the morning assembly kind of thing, the morning parade, in terms of religious rights. As the military expands and brings in people of other religions into the military, it has not performed itself appropriately enough. And we thought, let's start with the most solid institution. Because I think if you can change the military, you can change anything. The things are so solid that it's going to be the hardest thing to do. So we thought, let's deal with the issue of the military and how we transform the military to accommodate other religions beyond just Christianity. When a soldier dies somewhere, do they treat that soldier as a Christian? Or do they even check what religion it belongs to and for it to be treated accordingly in terms of your rights of passage as far as death is concerned? So we're talking to them about all those things. How do you make the lives of the soldiers better? Those soldiers are there to protect all of us. But how do you make sure that their cultural and religious rights are protected? And they help protect all of us. And how do you transform the military to talk to those rights? And we're also talking to Pentas, the MOU, and we're also talking to the legal board, which you might find very strange, but most of the staff we're working with is class action cases, because those cases will not affect one individual. So saying to the legal board, you need to find those communities for them to go to court and fight for their rights. So that if your rights are being exploited, you can resort to a court action. We all know how much court actions cost. And the Federal Rights Commission is not in a position to fund court cases. So we're looking at resources that will help communities to say, we'll pay for you to fight for your cultural rights in this particular aspect, in that particular aspect. So we're looking at all those partnerships, and we're saying we will be coming back for more in terms of proposed legislation, but we're also saying we need more capacity to do this work. para você cometer outras gerações, mais ainda, que sair do Dharma Life Commissioner's Concept, where the voices are louder, the action is more profound, and the same in order for us to continue to interest and to sustain the defense mechanisms of culture, religion, and language, we need more capacity to do that. So basically, our plan for the year will cover those issues.
It's a very complex matter. But I think there are colleagues who know the things that are honorable Macondo, Mariana, Deswa, Bemu, Lani, and Bawemba. I just wanted to make a few comments. Before doing so, to welcome the presentation and hope that this, as we continue in the future, would really be seeking to address some of the fundamental questions in a way that builds and that would be important to be done to not to inflame the situation. The first question, the first comment that I really want to make is on the balance question. There will always be, and this is the history, I think, of mankind, contradictions that develop between issues of development on one hand and cultural practices on another. So we are not the best people in the world to go through this kind of experience. And we can expect more of these kind of issues to arise as we move into the future. That's one practical example. In Johannesburg, the Black Horse Soweto, some of them come here. There are plus minus 2 million people who reside in Soweto. Now the question of scarcity of places to bury is arising quite sharply. So the thing of land not being available. The term theoretical abstract. It's a practical question that people there new better land is being identified and is further and further away from Soweto itself as a residential area or human settlement. So there are practical challenges that the municipality there need to address. Are there alternative ways of bearing? And this question has been faced by cities such as Paris or London or anywhere else. I mean, in Europe, for instance, I know for sure that some of the things that people are thinking about are not new solutions, are old issues. I've seen places where the coffin is just put inside a cement block and suspended in space. Like, it's just standing there. So someone thought that was the solution. There are many such places in Europe that we can look at. What I'm saying is apart from this in Sharpley, the questions that of religious nature, spiritual nature, questions that are of the self-concern to communities, we should also be answering the question, are there alternatives that are more meaningful, that can find expression and acceptance among the people themselves? Are we engaging people? So communities can be able to say, this is what we think, maybe let's try this, not that, or whatever it may be, and so on. So clearly what I'm saying is there are practical questions that need to be answered. And we should be part of that dialogue and find the appropriate solution. The second issue I want to raise, Captain, is the whole question of finances. That it's very, very difficult to find the finances and budget from government. In the main, because of competing programs, competing plans of the various departments that are in place. So if you want to argue and try and get more budgets than not getting at the moment, and I identify with the whole quest to get the department to have some resources so that we can address some of the challenges. But sometimes we tend to be very short on programs and on plans. I think that we've identified quite a number of challenges and are quite eloquent in outlining these. What we do need, though, is to turn these into programs and plans. But even as we are that, to be able to prioritize and say, these are the main things that we think ought to be addressed going forward. The last comment Shepard is going to make is in relation to the military. Just to say that I agree indeed with the idea that the military would be the most difficult idea. But I also hold the view, generally held to be correct by many people, that the military is one of the oldest organizations in the world. And then the old establishment, we do need to have a dialogue on these questions of the rights and related measures, including amongst others the whole question of religion and how to balance the situation. I guess the majority of people in our own army would be Christian, and all the others would fall. And the religion of everybody needs to be truly respected. So we need to find a way of striking a balance there. But I think that the dialogue would go a long way towards sorting out the difficulty and the problem. Yeah, I think the more we speak openly about the matter, the better. Because we must be able to tolerate other people's decision and be able to coexist. That's what the use of Africa is about.
Thank you, Secretary. Maybe I can start off where Honourable Mkondo left off. Even here in Parliament, we've had a portfolio committee, I think it was 2 weeks ago, where the chairperson wanted to open the meeting with prayer and didn't take into account the religious differences amongst people in that portfolio committee. So even here in Parliament, we haven't fully embraced the tolerance of different systems of religion or cultural language. Jefferson, I have a number of concerns, and maybe the first one is, I really welcome what you guys are doing here. I think that it's a big step forward, that there's a very concrete program of action, and I think that's really a positive step. I am a little bit concerned about the lack of measurable performance indicators. What are you going to do? How often are you going to do it? When are you going to do it? By step. Those are the kind of things that in a performance plan, an annual performance plan, I would expect. Then next year I'd like to see, well, what did we do against those? I'm also a little bit concerned about duplication of functions, and I'm aware that this has been raised, Chairperson, in the arts and culture portfolio with PANDEL, that there is an overlap of mandates on a language issue, and that essentially we're training money to two organizations to do the same job in some respect. I'm not saying it's completely that way, but there is an overlap of that. Chair, one of my concerns relates to, and let me back up a bit. Honourable Mathol spoke about balance, and the chairperson of the commission spoke about, you spoke about that cultural rights are not abusive, and that they are never abusive. And I'm concerned that there is a, I don't want to call it an element of hypocrisy, but maybe that's the best way to describe it. That your rights stop when my rights stop. In other words, it's a philosophical thing that says, I can do what I like in my space, but as soon as I enter into your space, I'm infringing on your rights. Okay? And we need to be very careful that we don't promote one community's rights ahead of another community's rights. So, for example, let me use animal torturing as an example, because it's one that is a very clear-cut example. There is a community that believes that this is a connection with their religious rights and ancestors and so on, and there is a community that believes that this is barbaric or harmful to the animals, whatever it might be, whatever their belief system might be. How do we balance those two sets of rights and beliefs without actually infringing? And that's the challenge for the commission, is to find a happy medium, I guess, that says, well, it can be done, but it must be done in certain areas. Or it can be done, it must be done in certain ways. I'm using this as one example. Equally, when we're talking about abuse of rights, and here I need to test so carefully because I don't want this to be misinterpreted. We spoke about the virginity testing. Now, in some belief systems, that is abusive behavior. It's gender insensitive. And we're a country that promotes the rights of women very, very strongly. I mean, better than 95-98% countries around the world, and yet this is a practice that we accept as positive. So I have a little bit of a concern, and I don't want to come across it as negative. I just want to understand how we deal with these things. Chairperson, I do want to express a concern about the regulation of religious bodies. Religious bodies, firstly, by their very nature, are protected in the Constitution. Everyone has the right of freedom of religion. They have the right of freedom of speech. And I think we need to be very cautious about becoming the morality police of South Africa. You spoke of when a pastor does something, eats people's grass. That might be a religious belief. I'm not saying it is, I'm saying it might be. And we need to be very careful that we don't start infringing on people's religious beliefs or their right to an expression. So by regulating what pastors can and cannot say, we are actually coming dangerously close to saying this way is the right way and this way is the wrong way. I do think we have criminal laws that you can't cross, and I think we should enforce this exactly as you say. We should enforce such criminal laws. But I think we need to just watch the way that we approach these things and not try to over-regulate what's already covered. Talking about language. Chair, I am also a little bit concerned, not that I could, but I am fully a negative. A lot of what we're talking about here overlaps with the Department of Social Development. Particularly, you spoke, for example, on children and guardianship, and I agree with you that it is extremely difficult to regulate that process. However, equally, we need to have some kind of legal basis to say, this person is authorized to fund this child for an operation, or to put this child on a flight. We've just had the Minister of Home Affairs introduce some very strong regulations on children's families. Now, if we don't know that this person has a legal right to sign that advice, then it's starting to muddy the waters all over again. What I'm hearing is a lot of challenges. I'm not hearing a lot in the way of proposed solutions. And honestly, that's what I think the Commission needs to focus on. What are the solutions to do this? So guardianship of children is an issue. How do you propose to address that? Similarly with the GRACE issue, I think it's common cause. Honourable McConnell spoke about the fact that graveyards are moving further and further out of the community because there is no space. As we identify the community, there's no space. What is the Commission proposing as alternative remedies for that? Similarly with development, Madupi is now booked. It's not operational, but it's there. The structure's there. How do I go and visit my ancestors' grave in Madusi? I can't, because they're not there anymore. But how do we say, you can't go there because there are graves there? Now, there are processes in place, the DIA processes, there's heritage impact assessment processes that have to be complied with before these things. What is the Commission doing to educate communities about their right to have input as an interested and affected party in the EIA and heritage impact assessment, but this, rather than coming after the fact and bemoaning that these are problems or challenges. Also, how do we get to a point where we can say development has to occur? We're a growing population. We've gone from 5 million in 1904 to 50 million in 2014. Population-wise. Those people need to live somewhere, there's development happening. How do we say to them, well, you can't live here because they're great there, go and live over there. What do we do to make that a reality? I think that, I do think there needs to be a lot more, as the chairperson of the commission said, a lot more communication and input into legislation. You obviously have the process of or the ability to submit your consent into legislation. I think you need to be careful of saying this is the only way. We need to look at a variety of options. But thank you, Chair. I think those are my concerns that I'm going to do.
Thank you, Chairperson. Somewhere Honourable Masolo and Honourable Malem have covered me. But the good thing that Bamasolo said is we are developing. And as a developing country, the issue of urbanization is also moving speed. Some of the people are urbanized now, they're modern. I'm bringing this into saying we need to indeed have that balance, meeting one another halfway. Coming to the issue of vicinity testing versus Ubutwala. Because there is a community that believes some of the cultures need to be done away with, some need to be revived. As I've touched on the issue of feminization. Feminization brings too many things, even the issue of the cross cultures. So like for instance, Others view it indeed as something maybe that doesn't encourage really girls. In terms of the presentation, when it was done, somewhere it was mentioned that some of the maidens do volunteer. But somewhere it has happened that it has been used as a punitive measure when children maybe were indisciplined, mainly on girls sometimes. That if maybe a girl has come late in the evening and maybe after the time maybe that is implemented in that particular family, and those girls will be subjected to be to that particular thing. So also another thing in terms of that balance, as we are a country that includes women rights, and also our constitution promotes equality. I understand that boys do go to initiation, and also girls in other cultures do go to initiation. But in terms of virginity testing, boys can't be tested. It's only girls that have been tested. But I'm saying this in terms of maybe a commission, in terms of this community participation, should at least try very hard in winning everybody. It's not maybe sometimes that people tend to be negative towards the cultures that are being practiced. But maybe it's because of where we are as the country in terms of our growth and development, as we are now sometimes modernized and also transformed me, I think.
No, thanks, Chef. I also want to thank you to know that I welcome the presentation. To me, it's more of having the skeleton now. The 1880s, it's not going to give us a clear direction. I tell you, I said, most of the issues here are quite debatable. We can debate and engage. But we have not seen the commission, what exactly. See the presentation, if you are listening to the presentation carefully, there is a lot than what is written here. So it was going to be better to get the details, the annual plan, as the three speakers have already alluded to a number of issues. Maybe let's get the really plan so that we can put the thing in action. We will support it. We will engage where we feel that we need to engage. Like the issue of with all this party now, what party? You talk about the regulation of the religious, that's a hot party. Well, it needs to be touched. It can't be left forever. It needs to be touched. But we don't know your plan around it. How are you going to plan? Have you been consulting enough? What are the reactions you're getting on the ground so that we can come up with a view on it? The issue of feminization as well is one of the issues that is in touch. People are migrating left and right, and culture are coming to a stage. You know, when you get to Joburg, you can't tell me which language they practice there, or what needs to be protected, what not need to be protected. But if you go to definitely it's easy to talk to people there because you find you know who are the people that you are going to find there, 90% of them, and how are you going to be regulated. And Kamaz, the one that you are doing, the last one of trying to save money for the commission, you must be careful that you don't also touch on the labor issues. To me, in terms of the Labor Relations Act, to save money in this way, it is quite incorrect. So, I think, bring your plan, let's look at your plan, and let's see where the gap of this, to find this money, other than to use this type of strategy for the department to survive. It's incorrect. And as I sit here, I'm just thinking aloud now that maybe I wonder if people are not pushed out in the department for you, there's money to do a certain program. Or I wonder if I sit here,
you should see another program that needs to be done. People are not really being victimized so that they leave for the Department of Money. We can't celebrate. The presidential address also stated clear that we must create jobs. And that must be the motive for everybody looking forward. That one in terms of budgeting, I'm not happy, Shama. But in most of the things, I can't wait to see the really proper action.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for the presentation from the Commission. I was going to ask a question earlier on, but as your colleagues have already alluded to that, the APP that has not been sent to members, it might be that the Commission has got an APP, because I see the second slide on your presentation. Talks about the revised strategic plan 2015-2020 and the APP. So the assumption is that the APP is there, which is a bit detailed, which can share with us so that we can understand the issues that the colleagues have been raising. But I must say here that from the presentation, get a sense that the Commission knows what is its role, what is its responsibility, and the vision that the Commission is having. You might debate issues that they are raising, but you can see clearly there is a vision around what the Commission has to do. And I think this must be applauded, because as the Commission, as the Chair was saying, they've got almost a year in office. Because by the time we interacted with them the first time, they had been appointed, and so they were trying to find their feet. So what they've come up with, I think we must really congratulate them on the articulation of a vision and define their role as a Commission. What we need now is a detailed plan, which I'm sure the Commission has got. They must just give to us so that we can be able to look at them and to make comments on them. I think there's a need for, and I see that the Commission is referring to the need for them to have a dialogue with other stakeholders to discuss some of the cultural practices like Utwala, Utolwa, and then others. I think that dialogue should it's necessary that probably ourselves as Parliament, as part of what he said, we need to engage on contemporary issues. It's one of the things that we can facilitate for the Commission to be there and other stakeholders, particularly the gender activists. I'm sure the Commission is aware that some of the women's organizations, in particular the ANC Women's League, have already pronounced on these matters, which pronouncement directly contradict what the Commission is seeking to do. And it's an important stakeholder in our society. So I think if we create that kind of a platform, we should be able to have a discussion around it, particularly to answer the question, how do we strike a balance? How do we make sure that there is a dialectical relationship between, on the one hand, the society that is modernizing, there is a rapid scientific and technological advancement, on the other hand, there is urbanization, on the one hand, and then on the other hand, there is a need for society to continue to preserve cultural practices. So there is a need for society to be able to maintain that balance, make sure that there is that dialectical relationship, because society keeps on evolving every day. And as it evolves, the new ideas that emerge, the new practices that emerge, there's a new knowledge that gets acquired in the process. So the question is, how do we make sure that that relationship exists? Fortunately, our country, we don't have a problem of fundamentalism like we are experiencing in other parts of the world. So we still have an environment where we can continue to dialogue, like we did when we adopted the Constitution. The other issue that the Commission has flagged on, which I would welcome that has to be done, is they need to do research around the culture and religion of the Kwe and the Sfe. And I would go further to say that research must also include the language. As you know, that the Department of Traditional Affairs under COG is in the process of trying to deal with the kinship of the Khoi and the Sfa, because it's one area that was neglected for some time. So I think there is a need, and we welcome what the Commission wants to do about doing this research for the culture of the Khoi and the Sfa people, their language and their religion. Because that is an important part of our history. When Johnson River came here, and I know that some people might have issues, the indigenous people that he came across here in Cape Town was the same, the Khoi and the Sfen people. And whatever that has happened over a period of time during colonialism has sort of obliterated the culture of this nation, the Khoi and the Sfen. So I welcome what the Commission would like to do. The issue of regulation of religious practices, I agree with that. I think people have got the right to practice, but whatever rights that are there in the Constitution are subject to regulation. You can't have a right that is not regulated. I don't think it is correct for anybody to look up and say that that person is the minister and that person has got the right to make people to drink petrol and eat grass and so forth. I think even though everybody has got the right to practice their own religion as enshrined in the Constitution, but those rights must be subject to limitations, must be subject to proper regulation so that people do not use this right in the Constitution. So I would welcome that initiative, and I think that it must just be codified in the form of legislation. Now, the other issue that I'm a bit concerned about, I understand the context that when you came in, you found a situation that the budget was sort of dependent. I'm concerned about the fact that almost 59% of your budget, which is 21.2 million of the 35 million spent on salaries. Quite a huge amount, and I think that there's a need for you to re-look into it to make sure that you release some more funding to fund your programs, because you've got very good programs that you want to implement. Thank you, Chair. Oh, lastly, the charter that you have attached on religious and on religious rights. Maybe if we've got time in the future, Chair, we might engage with the Commission about the charter. Because I see our subject looking at it, it was adopted in 2010, and there's been quite a number of years when this charter has been compiled. So if there's time in the future, Chair, we can invite them. One of the things just to take us through the charter. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I must apologize for arriving a little bit late. I was not here when the presentation was started. But Chair, without repeating what has been said by the speakers before me, but what I captured from the presentation, it forces me to believe that we are still having a political kind of a challenge in this country, because you will recall, Honorable Chair, that after the country in 1994 moved from an apartheid kind of a system to a constitutional kind of a system, you will recall that the apartheid system adopted the Westminster kind of a system. Something which was not touched by even the present dispensation. So when it comes to cultural norms and values of our African people, there will always be a challenge where you are going to have competing views. Those who are saying we are modernized, meaning that those who are still believing in their cultural norms and values are backward. So I want to emphasize on what has been raised by the chairman of the commission, that when laws are being made by this parliament of the people, I believe, or I want to believe, proper and meaningful kind of consultation must take place. And this must not be a question of you, of calling certain stakeholders to meet in a boardroom and think that the views that you have gathered from the so-called enlightened people, then those are the views that you are going to work on. It cannot be correct. That is why you will find that the people outside there are very much angry, because they feel that the Democrats they voted for in 1994, April 27, are not the beneficiaries of the same kind of a democracy. And I would differ on the question or point that we must focus. I'm not saying the speaker was saying where I was. Stressing the fact that we must concentrate on political formation. I should think when the commission is consulting, they must broaden the space to allow your traditional institution where the ordinary people are found. Because at the end of the day, the laws that are being passed by the parliament are affecting the ordinary people. Those are the people who must be made to understand that why this and that is happening. We must not undermine their intelligence. So I'm happy with the approach of the commission so far, and the commission needs to be supported. I understand that we are from different social background. Others are the advocates of your liberal kind of democracy. Others are the advocates of African democracy. Then we can debate this until Jesus comes back. Because we feel that after 1994, April 27, as Africans, we don't have identity here, because we are just following only the footsteps of the Western majesty. So it's a problem. Honorable Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, allow me to join my colleagues who welcome this presentation, and also to align myself with my colleague Philip Maplan, say that the mission, they know what they are doing and what they intend to do. Chairperson, I also want to request the commission to assist on the mission, on the regulation that to make connect that the mission of churches and cathedrals. The chairperson question was alluded on the issue of commercialization of the perennial leaders and religious practice. Based on that, chairperson, I want to request if the commission can assist on that regulation for formation of the churches and traditional leaders. Because based on North and Mkoba, this issue of when you see the grandmother, you say, you know, it's a witch doctor, it's a witch doctor. It's a problem. Like as the other villages we talked about is our colleague Mr. Mason, that they take people from the community, they take them outside from the village, they take them with doctors. You still have a little lot of people now starting to eat grasses in this region. If you believe they can regulate that. And before 1994, there was a comic that was taken out by the parliament that by the Council of Cities that the cities must have been fragile. But now there's no economic status of churches. We don't even know how many churches we have in South Africa, how many churches do we have. Now that's my request on different that certificate, but now also encouraging some churches, encouraging church leaders to visit other churches. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Dealing with the issue of traditional practice is a very difficult matter. Very, very difficult. If the Commission says that they will actually presume on the traditional leaders as agents that would bring about the desired change, I think that won't happen, because traditional leaders are first and foremost the beneficiaries of the best practices that are being discussed by the Commission. In other words, having debated the matters with the House of Traditional Leaders, the expectation that way back home they must hold the community and interact with them on these issues, but they don't do it because they are themselves beneficiaries to the whole system. So my view is that the Commission must come, you know, establish a system or structures outside, structures within the traditional setting. There are few voices in this community, but also we are also sort of critical about the existing practices in their communities. So I think we must move a step forward and try to establish structures in every community, and these structures should actually focus on sort of bringing the community together, enlightening them of these changes that the commission is trying to bring about. Because you as the commission, you can't talk to the communities, you can't go down to the communities, because the first thing that they will ask you is that, have you been, are you circumcised? That's the first thing that they will ask you as a member of the commission. But if you go and look for those progressive voices in these communities, for them to assist you to transmit the information down to the community, to all business, and talk about these things with the community, interact with the communities, communities will actually begin to give a hearing. For as long as the family is talking to them, is a member of the same community. Because I'm telling you, we are going to spend years in, years out,
with the traditional leaders. Back home, they don't discuss these things. They just keep these things for themselves. And the communities don't even know that these issues are being handled at this level. They don't know. They are surprised when they see these things are set in the TV. They become surprised because these things are set at a much higher, lofty level, and they don't have the information. So try and get people, progressive people, let people in this community first to come in to so that they can see the information as to which law things must actually be changed in a local program. For instance, the commission doesn't know that as far as the convention is concerned, I wonder whether you realize that if you look at the area where this thing is taking place, that it's taking place next to a river. The reason being that after second this young man, they must wash. And down the street, people are actually drinking the water. So these are some of the things that the commission has actually looked into. You can't change the system unless you know exactly what is happening inside the system. You can't change it. So we've got to start by actually getting structures up in the communities, because communities do not have the same practices. You can't just make it a blanket free. They don't have the same. Where I come from, our practices are quite different from the next community. But if you look at Limpopo, Limpopo is not a homogeneous, it's unlike Kwazulu Natal, it's not a homogeneous society. We've got the Kopas, we've got the Tswanas, we've got the Belles, and we've got the Shalans, we've got the Endas. So practices are quite differential. And therefore, if you want to have a meaningful impact as a commission, get down to the people for the first time, try and establish units in this community. Who can actually feed yourself with what is happening in the ground. So that when you go now and talk to the chief and the ministry, you say, okay, Peter, this is what you are doing. Now, in the place of this, can't we do it this way? In the place of this, can't we do it this way? As the people who must initiate this, must be people who are actually inside us to the community. Thank you very much.
The difficult thing, the more you talk about it, the more I think it's more complex for me.
Yes.
Since there are people here who are cultural activists here, they should organize a workshop, call the leadership here to go and assist through this workshop to communicate. I think it would be the best way to do it. Because it seems they've got some clue about these broader issues. There are definitely, I wanted just to raise before Chair and the team you answer. Is whether it's possible to develop a South African culture. Not practices, I think these other practices are fine, really. All clans everywhere in the world have their own practices. McDonald's, they have their own practices. When they eat in Ireland, they got their own practices. It can't be practiced by other Scottish. And the point I'm raising is that it's possible for us to develop a common South African culture. Because of course, those who argue that we're a rainbow nation, maybe a rainbow nation culture. And I thought that the CRR and others were meant to develop a qualitative culture of South African, taking all these practices and traditions that are there, but develop. It is correct that culture is a way of doing things by any society. Therefore, this thing changes from time to time. Therefore, developing a new South African culture. Culture that everyone knows that this is a South African culture, this is how we build, this is how we cry, this is how we dance, and this is how we sympathize with those who are bereaved, and this is how we sympathize with the minister is passed on, we can debate in the chamber. A general South African culture. That is really whether your lifetime complexion, your attack complexion really matters. The way of doing things in South Africa, the general way of doing things in South Africa, the culture is more than. And of course, I don't think we can change the rituals of individuals and how the Catholic does things, how the Protestant does things, the separate ritual. It's just important that we do that. But that goes that also religion and spirituality also clearly defined in our system, that should be a system of what is the spiritual nature of being, what is religion? Because sometimes people debate these things, sometimes one and the same thing, and it's very difficult for me to understand. The religion is a hearing capacity, a generalized fashion. It is spirituality that allows everyone to believe that my God, how I communicate with him is my right and my... It's just important that we do that and develop one South African culture that is going to evolve over here. But I thought the main purpose of the team is to start laying those foundations. I think that's why we want to go to people, laying a firm foundation of developing a South African culture. Where all of us know that this one is South African culture, generally. Even those who are cousins around the continent overseas, they know that these are South Africans, precisely because of the way that we think, the way they conduct themselves. And I hope you'll be able to do that and achieve as we are trying to live. I see the annual performance there also here. Well, you can come in and assist us on this, but it seems you can't absorb it. It's much more difficult thing. I just thought that is an easy thing. Much more and more you talk, the more than one scared. And then that's the possibility of uniting people, all of them, to appreciate this culture that was there, that defining in many ways. And I think the bigger problem, I just thought that this team should really sometimes define this thing in a way that embraces all of us. Bearing in mind that we want to build an unracial, unsexist, united and a prosperous country. That is our end goal. And developing a culture that assists us to reach that goal is very important for me. And because otherwise if we don't do so, I think we'll cause problems. We start to have problems that we must tolerate each other's culture. And if you are a separate nation within a broader nation, it means a bigger problem. We must one culture, generally. This is a general culture of South Africa. Then you will move on. And I just hope that, because otherwise we won't reach the society that we need to build. If the culture that we're developing against the culture that emphasizes some small rituals, then that ritual surely can't be massive ritual, that's a separate ritual. And they do things separately, well, this is a ritual, not culture. But it's important for us to live this thing much more systematically. I hope the team that is working on it, colleagues who are here also in many workshops, maybe they will participate fully. But I know that your program also engagement with community students and education is a very important one. Because I'm not sure how to deal with the religious people. Because it has become money-making, generally speaking. And how do you tell them not to make money? It's a most difficult thing. Because it's money-making. And I know that. And you want to open it as a shop for someone. And then you want to be rich. And it's a big shop. And then, yeah. To do these things, I think they will need a real lot of time. But the end result, anyway, should assist us to build a common qualitative culture of all sorts of things. Regardless of their background. Because we must also not encourage these varieties of the cultural things, the cultural, and must allow it at the traditional and ritual level. Make it difficult for that. And I think we can find a way of doing that. Your team is not qualified to assist us to arrive at that society. And then I know that what is the culture of South Africa before, how we do things in South Africa. And then, to me, it would be a very important thing, generally, as we move on. But we can't build it here in this meeting. I guess we have to go to people there, in love with them, where virginity testing is right or wrong. I don't even know it. I just in Alexander Township, we live with many people there. I don't even know there's a hash of the Mbawus. I just know that they've got their own tradition, their ritual, but it's not a South African culture. African culture, man culture, generally speaking. The ritual is different. The culture is one religion, but different in terms of ritual. And I think it's important for those of you who are experts in this area to assist to us. Because sometimes I listen to radio talks. Unfortunately, I don't hear some of you taking advantage of those laws and just clarifying things correctly. Because yeah, a very good slot in the discussion, I think. I listened to Professor Mutseha and then Professor Mutsume, and it's pretty position. But sometimes when it ends, I don't know what we are talking about completely. Because I thought that many of you are Catholic activists. You are not coming into a peaceful correction without closing them, but clarifying things correct on that. I thought you are missing a very important area of this lot about cultural activities and what is this culture we are talking about. If you can do that, it can be very helpful. Because who twirl all these things, they must be very helpful on that. I just think that I must say those things because you are going to answer. And I don't know this myself. But of course, we must meet with culture and art and culture community ourselves. I think sometimes we need a presentation channel that we can have with some of the colleges in parliament that are linked to cultural activities to avoid duplication. Shepherd, we must invite you and your team to comment where you want to comment. I think it's work in progress, really. Developing a new culture of South African people is work in progress. And I think we must welcome it. And Carlo, I know that you've got your own view of looking at democratic dispensation, their experiences. I think it's a very important one that we must engage. That we have a discussion there. We may have common understanding what we're trying to do. But I think what we want is a qualitative development of African, South African culture. And that all of us, our children, our kids, everyone knows that is the culture of South African people. It's not the culture of African, culture of... Because also the tendency of separating whites and blacks, and these are not Africans, they're wrong understanding. It's a wrong understanding. Of course, they were most brutally undermined, but they're part of African society. They're not different from sort of South African society. Once you start moving that way, we have a problem. We'll have the vendor also say that also give us our special attention. Give this one, but these are African people, all of them. They have never really... I think our understanding should be clear about what we are trying to do, because those who are reactionary, as Carlo was saying, I'm not sure it's the reactionary in Kasha that's saying. I know that South African people, generally speaking, are very conservative. They are socially conservative. Politically progressive, but they are very conservative, generally. I hope that you are going to assist us not to be too conservative on this issue. Okay. Check your floor and the professors who are here. They'll check us through. I think we could invite all of them there.
Hopefully they won't confuse him anymore. Thanks, Senator, Honorable K. I think I'll try and go through the issues. We thought you had a copy of the ATP in your pack, but we sent it through together with the presentation. This is a very thick document, about 26 pages. So we then extracted issues from the ATP that tells you quantity and quality. That tells you, for instance, what are we going to do, when are we going to do it. We sent all of them together with the site plan and the other documents. But because of the length of the document, we didn't want to go through it page by page, so we presented it in a plan. But if you need that to send, if it's not in your pack, or it is there, oh, okay. So the actual plans are actually there in terms of what are we going to do, when are we going to do it, and we've also broken it down into quarters. First quarter, this is what's going to do, second quarter, third quarter, etc. So we've already worked the actual plan. We're just giving you the overview. It's an issue that was raised in terms of race. What we normally do with our report, we then give alternatives and recommendations from the Civil Rights Commission. We ask the view that there will be a shortage. If it's not here, it's coming soon. The report is also looking, the one on grace, which you said, will bring to you by early April. That is looking at the issue of Meduki, that is looking at the issue of race. We've also looked at experiences across the country. Cape Town is a very good example of how they are reusing race. It's families who say, so-and-so will be buried today. When a member of the family dies, it's the family who says, this one will go to Gogo, whoever will sleep with Gogo there. That's part of reuse, but it's culturally acceptable. So we're not saying the silent. We're saying, let's look for alternatives.
better culturally and religiously acceptable. If the problem happens when Mkhwanazi is being buried on top of Mkhize, and I don't know, these people are fighting over the tomb clothes, which name goes where. But we're saying, so long as the system is sensitive to the cultural and religious practices, allow the family to say, this one is going there. Don't give us whatever you have and go according to, it's this great love that must be there. No, go in there. So we're not saying we don't appreciate the shortages, but we're saying we need to find solutions. So we'll bring the report there. Even on issues of crime, not a few copies, they are also saying, we come to the end and we're saying, this is what we're commending. This is what the crime is. This is what the crime is not. This one is going to go straight. This we know, and within the Bill of Rights, because our test, according to the Constitution, is that cultural practices and religious practices should not violate the Bill of Rights. So the litmus test of whether a cultural and religious practice will stay or go is based on whether it violates the Bill of Rights. If it doesn't violate the Bill of Rights, then there's no need to abandon it. And the issue of the military, of course, the military is its own issue. The issue of legal guardianship, we've made recommendations to the portfolio committee to say how you accommodate the other process of legal guardianship. Because since we free for all around children, we're also looking at how you traditional leadership in rural areas to help facilitate issues of legal guardianship so that children are not left stranded. But there's some way, there's a record of who belongs where. So we're making all those recommendations in the amendment, because right now they're taking amendments. So we've already made recommendations of how we include the other options. So we're not only saying this is wrong, but what we normally say is that this is how we can then accommodate the rest. And then there's the issue of PEMSA. PEMSA has a memorandum of understanding with PEMSA because we found that there's the issue of complaints around language, which is an overlap between what PEMSA is doing and what we're doing. Although they're not doing exercise to language, they're looking at the language. But we've already started the process of an MOU to look at that overlap. How do we work with each other to cover the issue of the overlap? The issue of animal slaughtering, we're also recommending alternatives. Because if you're in the business of nation building and social cohesion, you will traumatize your neighbor. We're very much conscious of that. If they see this little lamb standing next door and the kids think it's a nice little animal, and then suddenly they see you killing this thing. You're suddenly traumatizing the children so unnecessarily. So we're very much conscious of how you deal with these issues while you balance the issue. We've done research, we've been talking to communities. We know that normally children from other cultures, they look at the lamb and, you know, they even name it because it will stay there overnight. They think it's a nice little pet. And then if by some accident, they then see the friend that next door killing this thing. You know, it's not making sense anymore. Okay? So our recommendations always say, how do you take care of the needs of others? Because you also have your rights. But the right to violate the Bill of Rights and the rights of the children next door is a balancing act. Because you don't want to traumatize the children next door. They could traumatize for much of it again. You don't want to create that. One take off this one, find a mechanism that will say, if you want to slaughter, indicate your neighbor, then at this time, this particular hour, make sure that the children are awake. Because between 7 and 11 in the morning, we'll be slaughtering. By 11, the meat will be in the pot, so they'll know what happened and think we got it from the butcher. That's what our nation demands that we do. It's all issue around identity, it's all issue around tolerance, it's all issue around friendship, which our acts and our positions that we must bring. It's all issue around peace that we need, around social cohesion, around nation building. Do these things, but do them in the way that will accommodate the others. So all of our reports look at how you balance the issues. These are business testing and messages. It's another report we should bring to you in terms of what is discovered in our research process. The legislation, as I say, most of it comes from social development. The Children Act is very clear on how the thing should be done. It's the most highly regulated cultural practice I've seen lately. So it's very tight regulation. The Act outlines how you do it, how you who signs where, what they must produce. It's a very tight kind of regulation. All I'm saying is that enforce those regulations. Now, today, if someone is using this to discipline the child, it's not safe. So they're already violating the law. And all you need to do is to enforce the law. Because before they test, they need to verify one child, one-on-one. Are you here voluntarily? No one is forcing you to be here. If you're here, they need to be counseled by the people who are going to test them, but also they need to work with social workers to counsel them. That's what the regulations say they must do. So what we need to do is to capacitate people who are doing the genetic testing or the genetic inspection to make sure that their social workers can pay the law who assist them in counseling these children or these young people. So all I was saying is that enforce the law, capacitate them to be able to implement the law. And if you implement the law, you eliminate all the problems that you see. The problems are about the law not being implemented, not about the activity itself. So we're saying, make sure that what you say is the legislation is implemented on the ground. And the issue of regulation of religious bodies is a very important issue. Even within the Tarot Rights Commission, we should say, creates very heated debate. But I think we're in microcosm as the Tarot Rights Commission of how the country will react. If the temperature rises in Germany, you know what you're going to get is to move out. Next week, we're engaging with religious leaders across the board to begin discussing the charter, to begin discussing all those things. But when you look at the charter, the charter says your right to your belief system, how you do this thing is guaranteed. And you need to make sure that those issues are fixed. They are not up for grabs. The only thing we're dealing with is the commercialization aspect. But also the exploitation of people's belief systems. Because we'll tell you where we're coming from. If you can make people eat grass and they know they're not harmed, what else can you make them do? Radicalism starts there. You've got power and control over people's minds. And you can make them do anything. And if you allow for that to happen and to say this is holy ground, we don't know what else people ask people to do. If I can make it in this grass and do petrol, well, I can make it do a whole range of other things that are very scary. So we need to stay up where we are. Before we say this is holy ground, we need to say, where are we going with this thing? What will we be by this time? If people can manage your mind so much that they make you spin around like this, what else can they make you do? Can you sit back and say, it is okay? But what we're saying is that we're proposing a self-regulating mechanism. If you've got elders from Christianity, from Islam, from whatever, who then regulate the system, who then say your behavior is inappropriate for a Christian, then they know what Christianity is about. They're not going to kill Christianity. Even as a traditional healer, your behavior is inappropriate for a traditional healer because you're calling people witches, and making others still happen, and you are asking for body parts, or for the child, when the child changed, when the child had. Others of your kind should say what they are doing is out of order. And the only way of stopping you is to still register. You know, I get to register. Social workers get to register. All we are saying is, with the charter guaranteeing those rights to your religion, that's a done deal. The other crazy thing we need to deal with. So, we will be consulting extensively across the country on this one, in the media and everywhere, and we'll be making some proposals on this thing. These are the budget issues and possible victimization of staff. Another member raised the fact that by 59% in terms of our budget. So we're using a mechanism to lower that, so that we lower the ratio of program to staff salary deal. It's a double. You're trying to do the right thing, you're trying to remain within the law, and we're very nice institution, and we've got to move to. So, you know, everyone is heavy attacked. It's just that people get a better offer from others because we can't pay as much as other certain institutions pay them. So they tend to move on because their career passes, they are moving. But also going to be using intent is going very strong on intention, so that we can get more of creative, bring more young people into the arena of better religion and language and issue of rights. So we are going to be putting more intent very soon, like next month, yes, so that we bring this thing. The issue of broadening the space, to include traditional settings, that was we say that we need more funding to get to more villages, to get to more suburbs, to get to more areas where these issues will be discussed. With the budget we had, it had to go on a national kind of strategy to implement. We're hoping in the next cycle we'll have more funding to really go into the ground. The issue of witchcraft, for instance, we're currently in this month, in a national campaign, I'm sure some of you may have picked it up in the media when things again, to look at why people are being accused of witchcraft. If you remember last week, then an old man who was murdered in KZN, not Russia, this is somewhere above, in Canada was murdered and being accused of being a witch by young people. And he was killed, and he was just walking home, and they killed him because they said he's a witch. Well, in conversation with traditional healers, to say the issue of ritual killing, the issue of people being accused of witchcraft, it's also their problem. Because if you want the child paid, I'm not going to keep it in my fridge. It's because you want it. You promise that I'm going to win the lottery if I bring you the head of a child. And it's about time we have those consultations with our traditional healers that they can't continue ordering body parts in the name of culture. But there's a violation of the Bill of Rights right there. So we're very much against the issue of social healing. We're very much against the issue of identification, especially of older women who suffer from dementia, like Alzheimer's diseases, who are then identified as witches because for some reason they get confused and they end up walking around sometimes undressed, and then they say, no, she's bewitching all of us here, and they kill them. So we need to start educating our people. We should already start educating traditional healers themselves. We've had last weekend about 600 of them in Devon. Next week, next Monday, we're going to what they call Baloi Village in the Congo, a village where they've taken people, they say, are witches in the villages, and they've shipped them to this place that they call it the witches village. This has been over 20 years, this is democracy. How do you have villages that are there for people who are witches? And we're having a conversation with traditional leaders on this thing, but it's the villagers and the traditional healers, the leaders, who then sentence these people to expecting. So where is there to say this kind of sustainable? So the whole issue of identification of people as missions is very much in cities right now. We have a national campaign which brings about 10 places throughout the country. We still have, I think, 5 more left, where we're preaching the gospel and missing traditional healers themselves to say, help us solve this problem. The issue of traditional leaders being beneficiaries and the issue of us working with the communities on the ground, our act says we must set up community councils and register them. And that is the system we are using in terms of how we get to the community. So we got over about 300 registered community councils that we work with and pay our legislation. So that when you go into a particular place and you're looking for people of Shamas, you know you've got Shamas community council that will guide in terms of what their practices are, what the challenges are on the ground. So in our next round of this conference, that's when we bring in all these people and pay the legislation to one place to say what are the issues we want us to deal with in the next 5 years. So that we know we've got people on the ground who are there in the communities who then give direction to us. And we've got a lot of these community councils all over the country who are registering more as we go forward, who are our feelers and fingers on the ground who help us give direction outside the traditional leadership, outside the political leadership, outside the religious leadership. As we say, we want communities themselves to tell us what the issues are. We've got more applications we should then look at. Right now we've got about 300 registered that already throughout the country. So we're very much conscious of the fact that there's no one place where you get to the truth. There's the truth is everywhere and the interpretations are everywhere. And the issue of charter is also counted. The issue of the religious charter, the issue of the cultural charter, the issue of the language charter. We're saying one of the people themselves have this massive a campaign we're going to have with the religious sector to say, tell us how you feel about the charter and say it's in your passive way. We're also going to ask you to comment on what you think about the charter, and we're very happy that a proposal has been made to say we need to come back and have a session on just the charter and what we want to do with the religious sector so that we engage with the committee and the committee can give us direction once we make a full presentation of what the charter is, what it is, where it's going to. And we hope it's going to be soon, and we want to roll out fast and furious. This is the South African culture. It's very important that we have what we call, which we haven't had in the country before. What are the acceptable principles that we live with as a nation? People will say it's Ubuntu, but we say it goes beyond that. We say, it's the whole issue of how we deal with the second issue. We were saying, just recently, the Civil Rights Commission, what happens when someone passes away? You know, those rites of passage are very important. That we are very common, you know, there could be differences here and there. But how do you deal with the people who have departed? Why is it important that you behave in a particular way when someone has passed on? How do you talk about someone who has passed on? Because I think, as a nation, we look at each other like, how can someone say this about someone who has died? Because in certain circles, it's okay to say negative things about people who have died. If people pass on, hey, that's what must be said. And our communities look at that like, seriously? How do you say something like this about someone who's no longer here? You know, the unwritten laws, because the people might not even know that they are breaking. Then my finger went, this one is actually useless, so what? And the whole nation is looking at your television like, how? You know, so we need to start codifying this issue. So that as a nation we know it's inappropriate to the majority of people to behave in this way and not in that way. Don't eat of what young people do in trade, yes, then spinning us and whatever. We need to begin to support those things. that's inappropriate. We need to start talking to our young people about stealing of cars and shooting of cars and all sorts of things that is inappropriate to do that when someone is passed on. So we could decide these things and the chair is saying, let's look at South African culture that covers all of us. So that, you know, when you're in doubt, you can go somewhere and say, by the way, what is appropriate under this circumstance? So we're not separated over such a long period of time. In fact, we don't understand each other and we need to go into a study period of appropriate behavior and inappropriate behavior. When we work with people from other countries, for instance, they will come to work in the morning and say, I'm burying my mother in the afternoon. And you look at them like, you're burying your mother in the afternoon and you're like, hey, are you here? And to them it's normal. You know, it's going to happen in the afternoon, so I don't need to be there. So that at least we begin to understand across cultures that this is appropriate, that this is not appropriate. And we have a codified thing that we look at how we build this. Not just about cultural practices and stuff, but just about what does Ubuntu mean? What does it mean to be a South African? How do you promote this thing, this tolerance, friendship, peace, nation building, social cohesion and things as South Africans? So we will be looking at that, and we're hoping, seeing that we've got the MPP, that you will be inviting us back and we'll make sure that you get the report. The one on the 12 we've just given you, we'll be giving you the initiation report, which we launched last year. It also has proposals from us. We'll be giving you the grace issue and the Medusa thing in terms of culturally, how do they move those spirits away from there so that people can then take the spirits of their target people away from Medusa to another place so that their place of worship is shifted from Medusa to the place. If there are still bones that are there and we've identified a few graves, how do we culturally and with the sense of African religion move those bones that are still there and place them somewhere? So we're looking at those alternatives, not to bring down the Duke that's already not working, we also don't like the duck. So we're saying, let's find a middle road that will be culturally sensitive, but also saying, by engaging everyone on issues of especially Ukhlolwa and what it means, why do we feel it's the enforcement of the laws that need to happen as opposed to the abolishing of those issues. So we're going with a massive campaign ready to talk to people, to talk to religious leaders, to talk to cultural activists, cultural practitioners, to deal with the issues of language, to find the middle road of how we deal with the issues of language. Last week we were having a discourse with the African community around the issues of language. So we look across the board, not just in terms of Africans, but next week, I think for 2 days, we'll be engaging the African community to say how do we deal with language issues around Africa. So it's a big conversation we'll be going on nationally. And we're hoping in the next financial year, when we have more funds, we'll do massive campaign on this issue. Thanks a lot.
Just to emphasize one or two points. First and foremost, what you heard from the chair, both in terms of the presentation and the answer. The CRL was framing the problem. And that is the nature of the problem. The society is confronted with. Because until you are able to frame the problem correctly, you will not be able to come up with a solution. So it was very clear that we understood the nature of the problem and that the associated solutions will have to be crafted outside of knowing the stipulation. Secondly, it is important too to understand the question when we talk about development. Whose development? Because unless you are able to do that, make a distinction between development and ask the question, school development, culture, whose culture? Because if you look in other developed countries like China, China has a multiplicity of assets. But they use Confucianism as a principle to ensure the realignment of cultures to respond to one reality. Which is why our congregation of religious institutions, the traditional leaders, all of that are intended to find a common denominator around which we can organize a common African culture. But it is important to understand that you cannot define yourself using a Eurocentric culture of liberalism and use that as a denominator of what you want to be known. Because that is a loss of your identity. Oppression was not only oppression of a physical being, but oppression of our language, our culture, and our religion. Now, democratically, we are set out to liberate the language, to liberate culture, to liberate religion. What do we do? So the primacy or intent even of funding is to understand that this is a hard bit of society. So the public cannot be understood outside of his culture, of his religion, and his language. And so when you deal with budget is a game of numbers. But here is the question of hierarchy. Where do you see South Africa going forward? Question of culture, very clearly. So, and this is our view, Chairperson. Thirdly, the issue of Pennsylt, the distinction between Pennsylt and ourselves. Pennsylt deals with the development of language. Standardization of language. Development of dictionaries, grammars, and the rest of it. If we identify a diminished language, we hand over to Pennsylt to develop it. So it becomes a language of communication. And it's included as part of the South African 11 or 1313. So, that's all that. But here, we protect the rights and promote also the rights of linguistic and cultural community. We are protectionists. So we cannot be in the business of one or protecting and abolishing the data. So that which is abolished must be consistent with the Constitution. So it's a critical for that which has to be understood in that way. For instance, now, we're confronted with something that may seem to derail our democracy, which may become, as we speak now, a time bomb. Ethnicity and tribalism. Malamulele has made that sharply. And we're now working with the University of Pretoria to research Malamulele as a case study throughout the country. To what extent is this time bomb is going to explode in our face going forward? So the very key consideration as serious alienation. We understand our money. We have spent our money. We made the act. Now, in the plan, we flesh it out. You can see how we seek to implement and realign the money with what you want, our activity. Thank you so much.
No, we have more time. One day we have more time. Just to have a discussion on this. Just bearing in mind, Magamuchi, South African society is evolving. But rather is my greeting to Urban Center. And then I think you'll stay in Alexander for 2 weeks. You will tell me what port is in Alexander right now, because the typical cosmopolitan city is open. In Africa, it's the only thing that is cosmopolitan. And then, because otherwise, I think it's a bigger problem then. But I think we are going to have a discussion as we are dealing with it, and I think Madam Leila's case study can also assist us on that. And then even the fact that people they are keen for that. No, I'm telling you, it's urbanizing, it's great speed. Some of the Madame Lena tendencies 55 years down the line will disappear. We're no longer in Alexander for speed. But the point that we must balance it very well, it was very nice to have this discussion. Culture is very dynamic and it's very difficult. I hope that your team, Mamkwana, will assist us then to arrive at a common understanding of South African culture. And I agree that there will always be anchor area that we have to develop over time. But it's going to evolve, but I don't think it's going to be imposed by anyone through this weekend. people will evolve over time, but must lead the society at discussion. As we have this meeting, surely I think members who are available, just invite them, send something to the situation. If it's in KZN, I think members of the committee in KZN, surely they will attend. Because all of us are learning to build a new nation, a new society. None of us can tell that we know is the South Africa that we want to build. It's a process of building a new country, getting rid of all previous and backward tendencies, whether that racism, sexism, all these tendencies are getting rid of. And then build a new South African identity. I think to me it's very important that we do so. Given the fact that anyway that we are people with multiple identities. I know that I don't agree with Andy, we agree only because we are supporters of swallows. That is our identity. It's almost getting out of the heat. But we are dying with it because we are fair supporters. And then we are multiple identities. It's very important that we are building a culture in a society that is multiple identities. The main identities. Without undermining them, but they have to have an overall South African culture that will develop over time. Because if we don't do that, we are not going to deal with the issue that the professor has raised. Because it's a very important area that we have raised. Let us learn from other experiences, learn from other countries. Nation building takes longer than I thought. I thought it's 5 years, as I'm told now by Masono. And those who have been studying nation building or formation take 100 years. Then myself and Melham will be long gone when a South African identity is developed. I guess that 8 years from now, he will be 150 years old. 140. I think he can live long. Carlo and Matagliela would have been long gone. But we are not laying foundation for future generations to build on it. It's important that we don't make mistakes on our foundation and our understanding of the challenges of the country. But that means when we are angry, sometimes we place the confidence that there is a solution in the country. Everyone must respect that. Whether you are angry or not angry with each other, but you must respect that. Because it's only the thing that binds all of us, the South Africans, and building on that in the common identity, the common culture, is a very important thing. We are going to meet with other colleagues in some committees, and maybe when we are making some presentation, rather than duplicating it with art and culture, just we do it once, the short meeting, you come in, you bring all of us, have interaction and discussion on that. I think we should do so. There's absolutely no harm to do that. But I know that on the engine anyway. The water and sanitation team is meeting with us, have a joint meeting, joint discussion, all these things. It's just important that we do that because they overlap. The more we meet together and have a discussion, I think we'll be able to them too. A really good life with a very difficult task of building the soul of the country is not going to take years. And then, the constitutional democracy is respecting all our rights. My right to slaughter must not be undermined for those who don't want me to slaughter. Anyway, slaughtering happens everywhere in the world. Sometimes we all exaggerate as it is South African problem. Time is the hidden people that do it, the culture, the Asians, they do it. It's just how do we tolerate each other as South Africans. There's a constitution, we must respect it. To me, the basic thing that we must respect our constitution. The rest will build over it and move on and build a very good and prosperous society. The end result, a non-racial, non-sexist, a prosperous South Africa. So you think we build a society, nothing else. We are culture, must assist us to build this new South Africa. 20 years from now, we must know who are you, South Africans. And I know that many of us maybe won't be there, but some of us will be there, I guess. But the point I can raise is that let us meet and then have a discussion, give us the documentation that you are saying is going to be there, colleagues are going to be reading themselves. Some are very, they are cultural activists, some are not. And then, but learn from experience, and many professors and doctors here have done a lot of work on the experiences and comparisons in other countries. But the point that we must, that South Africans must talk about it. We mustn't hide these things. South Africans must talk about this thing. Because the more they talk about it, the more they are open for discussion and so this thing. I think that's what they are going to do, colleagues. And then that is unfortunate. I think Hosh is coming in when we are computing. We're talking about the culture. Then this is she's the queen. And at the conclusion now, I think we are going to praise her for the cultural issue. I think she must be interested in cultural activities. And you are saying when you are in Mombo, Kubaloi village, I think she can be with you, have a discussion on some of the cultural issues. And then, of course, we always accept that we must discard all negative cultural tendencies. And then she regarded for the, she is Melham who's doing that or Mason. Anything that is against the basic human rights, the Bill of Rights of our people, can be a cultural issue. And then we must move on this thing because there's a lot of distortion of culture. Extremely distorted. Every individual now, you want to do bad things in my culture, never did. I think that's what we are using, that have never been abusive. The way of doing things of people is the progression of the society. It can't be bad if you do so, but I think dealing with these matters is important. Let us link up, have a discussion. And then thank you for the annual performance plan. We are here now. We know that we don't have money. Daniel Calvin doesn't have money. Simply means that we must use the link that we have to maximize the impact of the society. And the members are here, and many universities in South Africa, I think they are interested in to have discussion on some of these issues. I think it would be good to do so. And then we will then invite you when you are ready to have another discussion on this issue. But members will be notified whenever you are having this dialogue with the society. I think invite members, they will attend, and invite also many organizations and communities. Because those are organizations that will assist you as you try to transform in society. Invite them. Some of them may see them that they are minimal in the moment, but they grow. They become, they're making real input on this matter. The religious sector do this thing. It can't be right that every corner there's a share. Every corner there's a share. It's another thing that is happening that I think of my sisters do as well. They are very important that we do so, but I think must work on that. And I hope Chairperson and his team will again have discussion. Hopefully, we're going to look at the annual performance plan. We know that we don't have billions of rand, but we do believe that the link that we have, we can maximize the impact. And we are convinced that we can do so. And then that's what we will do, colleagues. And then I think we must release you. We have been in Cape Town long. May join us on that, but members can just remain for a second to deal with one issue, a small one. Before we go to, we are invited to the chamber.
Oh.
Go there, listen, and the debate. Okay. A very exciting debate. And of course, I think we are aware that one of our ministers passed off. Mm-hmm. And therefore, in the morning, we are ready to know the debate. That's why I'm not sure why it's pitching the word of no consent. Thank you very much.
Okay,
thank you.
No.
I don't know how.
Yeah.
Let's take our 5 minutes to long for one, we are home. Maybe I move on to the meeting today, I'll be
meeting.